Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Tuner, Two Prosecutors, and In the Hand of Dante.
Daniel Rohrer is a filmmaker who, up until now, has made just documentaries. But now he has made himself a fiction feature. And I have to say, it's not a bad one, although it has screenplay problems. Rohrer also co-wrote the screenplay with Robert Ramsey. And I have to say, there's problems with that, but we'll get to that in a moment. Anyway, Tuner is, as the title may suggest, about a piano tuner who is played by Leo Woodall. It's an interesting situation because he's an unusual piano tuner. I once had a piano tuner who didn't know how to play the piano, interestingly. And I don't think he did a very good job of tuning the piano, but he had a business and there he was. In this case, this piano tuner definitely, his name is Nicky, he definitely knows how to play the piano, but he has a real hearing problem. And it's interesting, my piano tuner, because I got a piano and I got to have it tuned a couple of times a year. He now uses computers and stuff like that. But this Nicky guy, he seems to do it in the old-fashioned way by just listening to the sounds and tuning it, you know, with his little tuning instrument in the piano. So that's very nice. But his hearing problem is that he is unbelievably sensitive to sounds, so that throughout the whole movie, pretty much, he wears earplugs because normal, ordinary sounds that most of us take in stride are torture for him. So he's an unusual person who makes his living by being a piano tuner, who we are told numerous times in the movie used to be himself a magnificent jazz piano player, but now has this condition which came upon him, and he just can't stand the sound of his own piano playing or of any other kind of piano playing. He does manage to do his job, however, of being a piano tuner because he has a little ear plugged in his ear all the time. So that is the basic setup. Early in the film, Nicky, our piano tuner, by accident meets a guy who immediately strikes us in the audience, I think, as being very shady, very tough, not a nice fellow. And the guy claims that he does security, and that's why he's in this very wealthy place in the middle of the night. Well, I'm just doing some security. Well, of course, he turns out to be a total crook. Now, Nicky has a father who is played, by the way, by Dustin Hoffman. It's a small role in the movie, but an important one. And the father is sick. And fairly early in the film, the father has a horrible medical crisis. The family was already in medical debt. Now they're even worse in horrible medical debt. So Nicky has just met this very shady character who claims to be doing security when obviously he's some sort of a burglar or thief, he and his little gang. And of course, Nicky ends up going into business with them. He is going to help them because with his unbelievably acute hearing, he is going to be able to open safes. When they break into a house, he will go in with them. He will listen, get the tumblers in the safe right, and open up the safe, whereupon they will rob it. So that's basically the story here. We have this once honest piano tuner who has his hearing problem, which is also a gift because his hearing is extremely sensitive. And he goes into business with these thugs. And, well, the movie unfolds from there. I said before that the movie has real screenplay problems, and it really does. It relies way too much on coincidence. There are things just happen to happen at the same time, or just happen to happen right next to each other, or people just happen to be in the same place when something is going to go on. And this happens more than once in the film, and it really detracts from it, in my opinion. It's a good movie in pretty much all other respects. Leo Woodall is very fine as Nicky White. Dustin Hoffman, of course, is one of our finest actors. And the supporting cast, people like Ellen Jameson and Tova Feldshaw and Gene Yoon, they all do a splendid job. And I had a good time watching the movie. I have a piano. I play the piano from time to time. I have my piano tuned. I think it's an interesting musical film. And I haven't even mentioned one of the important subplots, which is that Nikki, our main character, meets a young woman who is studying to give her recital as a conservatory student, and he has to tune her piano at one point, and they get very involved with each other as well. So we've got a romantic subplot, we've got a crime subplot, we've got an illness subplot with Nikki's great hearing problem and with the father's very severe illness, and we've got a financial subplot. So the movie has got a lot going on. It's very coherent. It tells its story well. But oh, those coincidences, they are just too much for me to bear. Other than those, it's a good movie. With those, it's a very flawed movie. You might even say as flawed as Nikki's hearing. Next movie I'd like to talk about is very, very different. It is called Two Prosecutors. And it was directed by Sergei Loznitsa, who is a Ukrainian filmmaker. And this is actually an international co-production, but that's where he's from originally. And it's a very good movie, and it very much deals with what used to be called the Iron Curtain, because it takes place way back in the 1930s. In 1937 is when the story takes place. And this is the time when Joseph Stalin, the dictator of the Soviet Union at that time, was putting through these horrifying purges where enormous numbers of people were being thrown into prison as political prisoners, mistreated horribly, executed, all kinds of abuses, and just hideous things were going on under Stalin's reign back in those days. So the movie takes place during all of that. And we start off with a really old man who is a political prisoner, and he is being held in some sort of horrific conditions in some Soviet prison. And he is being given a job that he needs to do. He's handed a whole bunch, not handed, dumped on him, are an enormous number of scraps of paper. And these are letters that people have written to the authorities, to Stalin or the other people in charge, complaining of the horrifying conditions under which they are being kept. And basically, what these letters are saying is, "Dear leader Stalin, please know about the horrific things that are being done to us, the horrifying prisons, the unjust charges, the purges that are going on. Do something about this. Please save me, great leader Stalin." Now, of course, great leader Stalin doesn't even want to see these letters, much less do anything about the complaints that are in them. So this old man at the very beginning of the film is just a whole floor full of these are just dumped on him. He is given a little stove, one match, and told, "You must now destroy all these letters so that Stalin never has to be bothered with them, so that none of the authorities ever have to deal with them or even know about them." So the old man starts to burn these little scraps of letters. However, one of them catches his attention, and he manages to secrete it on his person and smuggle it out of this room where he has destroyed all the others. And this little scrap of letter, written, by the way, in a prisoner's own blood, because it's the only ink that the prisoner could get a hold of, he manages to get a hold of that, and he decides he is going to bring this to the attention of the authorities. The NKVD, the famous Soviet secret police, he says are abusing their power, and he is going to try to do something about this. His name is Alexander Korniev, and he is a young lawyer. So Alexander, our main character, betakes himself to Moscow, where he decides to go to the head of the NKVD there. He gets up to a fairly high authority, who is another prosecutor, and he says, "Here's this letter, look at it, written in blood. We've got to do something about this. The NKVD is abusing its power." So now the big question becomes for us watching this movie, is this very high-level prosecutor going to do something about this or not? And what we see is Alexander's attempt to bring this to the attention of this very, very high official, not the highest official, but a pretty high official in Moscow, and see if that official will do something about it. Well, we then pick up the story later on when Alexander is now going back to where he came from, and he meets some strangers in a railroad car. And I won't tell what happens from there. Two Prosecutors, which is in fact about two prosecutors, is a very suspenseful movie. Obviously, we know that Stalin was not a good guy. Obviously, we know that the NKVD was not a good secret police organization. And we know that Alexander's quest is very likely to come to naught. We know, in fact, that Alexander's quest just might end up destroying Alexander. But it's very nice to see him going about this. He is an extremely principled person. He wants to do something about this. He wants to take this in hand. He is idealistic, and we see him go about attempting to do this. It's also not too surprising, and I'm going to reveal now the movie, let's just say, does not come to a very happy ending for Alexander. But along the way, it has moments of real suspense in it. And it is really, really beautifully acted and very, very well directed. It's a very straight-ahead movie. It's a very old-fashioned movie in a lot of ways. And that, I think, is very much to its credit. Two Prosecutors, a really, really interesting movie about crime, justice, injustice, corruption, and all the related things that might go along with that, way back in the Soviet Union of the 1930s. And if only the world were a different place today. We can see parallels between what goes on in this movie and things that we know are going on in present-day Russia. So, a very, very interesting movie. It's streaming. I heartily recommend seeking it out. True Prosecutors, a movie which is well worth seeing. And our final movie for today, In the Hand of Dante. And yes, that is Dante Alighieri, the great writer of the Divine Comedy and La Vita Nuova and various other works. Those are his best-known works. And this is very much a movie that deals with Dante. And in fact, Dante is one of the main characters in the movie, but not the main character, because the movie switches back and forth between Dante's own time, way back in the 15th century, and today. So we have a movie with a very changeable time scheme. And of course, we have the use that often happens in movies of this sort, where black and white and color differentiate between Dante's more colorful world and our own more prosaic world. But anyway, that's what the movie is about. It stars Oscar Isaac. Like many people in this movie, he plays two roles. He plays Dante and he plays another writer. He plays Nick Tasches, who wrote the book that this movie is based on. And Nick Tasches is also one of the really main characters in this movie. So here's what happens in the film. Nick Tasches claims to know something about Dante. He apparently really does know Italian, and he is translating the Divine Comedy. He's been doing it for a very long time. And he then hears from a mobster in modern-day America that there is a manuscript of the Divine Comedy. Now, it is famous in literary circles that there is no original manuscript of the Divine Comedy. It is only known from copies of that manuscript, which were made over the centuries and handed down over the centuries. But now, according to this mobster who employs the fictional Nick Tasches in this movie, there is, in fact, an original manuscript of the Divine Comedy. And Nick, the main character, one of the main characters, is dispatched off to Italy to find it, get a hold of it, and bring it back, whereupon this mob boss is going to sell it. Well, how is he going to manage to sell it? How's he going to manage to convince the world that this is actually an authentic manuscript? Well, that's another job that Nick is given in the movie. In fact, he gives it to himself. He says, "Yes, I'll do what I can to get a hold of this original manuscript now that you've put me on the trail, but we're going to have all kinds of expert witnesses who will confirm that it's legitimate, authentic, and a real original manuscript." So that is what the movie is about. It is about Nick going off to get a hold of this manuscript and then going to various experts to get them to authenticate it. And it appears that it very well might be an authentic, true manuscript. That's not so much of a problem for him. But of course, they all want to know, where did you get this thing? How'd you get a hold of it? Now, this is only some of what goes on in the movie. I've mentioned the mob boss, played, by the way, by John Malkovich. And he's such a versatile actor. He's really good at being threatening and scary. Okay, so he's the guy who sends Nick, the fictional Nick, off on this great quest. But we also have this horrifying killer named Louis, played in a marvelous performance by Gerard Butler, who was sent off with Nick to accompany him. And what Louis does is He kills people. He kills people without even thinking twice about it. He just pulls out his gun and kills not only anybody who might want to get in his way on this quest, but anybody who might later on possibly be a witness to what's been going on. So that's what goes on. We also, I will mention, have Al Pacino in the movie, small role, but an important one, playing the very, very ancient uncle of the Nick character. And also, we have Martin Scorsese in the movie, the great filmmaker, playing an old, wise person covered with an enormous white beard. Took me a little while to even recognize Marty Scorsese, to whom the fictional Nick goes for advice and wisdom along the way. So, once again, we have a movie which goes between different centuries, our own century, and around 500 years ago, roughly speaking. We have a main character who is a literary expert who is dealing with an authentic literary find, treasure, magnificent thing, and who is allied with mobsters and killers. Now, the big problem with the movie, in my opinion, once again, we have a very interesting movie with a real problem, is that assassin Louis is way too eager to kill people, way too eager to take out his gun and just shoot people for almost no reason at all. This I felt was way over the top. Other than that, I found In the Hand of Dante to be much better than most of my fellow critics think it is. It's fascinating to watch, around 2.5 hours long, but really has marvelous acting and an interesting and unpredictable story. In the Hand of Dante is a movie in the hands of which I was happy to be for about 2.5 hours. So that is my partly medieval Italian story this week.
For which we thank you, as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Tuner, Two Prosecutors, and In the Hand of Dante.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.